Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and it's a Happy New Year show at January 4th because starting off and kicking off the new year is always so exciting. We're going to kick off this first show with a talk about color, because all quilters like to talk color. Doesn't matter who you are, what you're doing. And I have got the fabulous Jackie Kunkel here, who has been on the show before, and we're going to talk about deep dive into color. So hi, Jackie, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. Happy New Year. Thanks for inviting me on.
You know, your book just came out, and it's called Splash of Color, which just seems so perfect for us to kick this off and do some talk about color, because you are not afraid of color, are you?
No way, Jose. The more color, the better. It's one of my mottos. You put as bright and bold color in your quilts, and it just makes, for me at least, it makes my heart sing, and I know that there's a lot of quilters out there that love and are attracted to such deep, saturated, bold, bright colors. So it was a labor of love for me to do this book, because I just enjoyed every single minute of it.
Now, what I want to do is talk a little bit about the concept of it, because Splash of Color is you're walking people through taking black and white fabrics and then adding that punch, the whole spectrum, the whole rainbow of colors. So how did you, how's the book laid out?
So it's laid out, I have actually a variety of different quilts in it. So if you're a beginner quilter, you're certainly can, there are several patterns in there that they can work from, and then it goes to much more difficult quilts. But how I conceived the book is, I have a pretty large stash, and I've been collecting over the years of black and white fabrics, and I love to pair those with bright and bold. So I do talk about in there how to choose your black and white fabrics based on scale and print, and then how to pair them up with your colors to get your that nice contrast. But in the book, one of the things that I really enjoyed doing was I have some of the best friends in the world, and they stepped up to the plate for me, because one of the concepts I had was that, you know, when quilters see a pattern, it's hard for them to get past that cover sheet. They may like the pattern, but they can't necessarily conceive seeing it in other fabrics or colors. So I designed the original design, and I did it in the colors and layout that I wanted. And then I said to my friends, I said, pick one of these, pick one of the designs, and let's work with kind of in a few rules, and then make an alternate layout, maybe in your colors, or I gave them different rules. So with almost every design in the book, not every single one, but almost every design, there's an alternate photo or colorway or layout of the particular design. So if you're a quilter looking at the book and you're saying, well, gee, you know, that, you know, the way Jackie did it, it's a great design, but the colors or the layout doesn't appeal to me, well, there's a second one in there. So
that's great.
Which I think is fabulous. So,
you know, you teach a lot, Jackie, so you know what people are coming into the environment and wanting to know. So I think that's what people are going to see in the book. And what I saw is that your experience of, you know, you sort of know what they're going to ask, what people are going to ask, and you've solved it already for them.
Right. At least I like to hope, think, you know, putting that seed in their minds. So I'm hoping that helps them to think a little bit more about the design.
So let's do a little more depth on black and whites. You know, there's lots of different shades of black and shades of white, which, you know, people, unless they collect them, you're not really thinking about it. How do you go about pulling a collection for a quilt to get it cohesive?
Yep. So in some of the quilts, so for instance, in some of the quilts in the book, one of the things that I like to do when I'm purchasing black and white fabrics, I do often look at the scale of the print, whether it's a small, medium, or large scale. Now, depending on the type of quilt that I'm putting it in, will depend on which scale print I use. Mm-hmm. So if the block is a little bit smaller, I tend to use a medium or a smaller print, because oftentimes if you want to use one of the larger black or white prints, you're going to not see it because of the way it's, so to speak, blown up.
The design is blown up.
You won't see it as much. So, for instance, in my book, one of the quilts called Crossroads, you certainly, and I did in that quilt, I used some large-scale black and white prints in there because you can see the print more in that because the blocks are slightly larger. Whereas in the cover quilt, Hip to Be Square, the pieces that we're cutting for those blocks are relatively on the small side. Mm-hmm. So by mixing it up and combining them with more smaller scale prints, you get this cool look on the quilt. It gives it more of a scrappy kind of look mm-hmm. when you're using that smaller or medium scale when you're cutting it in smaller sizes. So.
Now, are you also mixing those tones, like for, you know, pure whites and into mm-hmm. sort of ivories and maybe even mm-hmm. more cream? Are you putting them all in the same quilt?
Well, yeah, interestingly enough, so for most of the quilts in the book, I was very careful to choose. I chose pure whites, pure blacks.
Okay.
But that's not to say that, mm-hmm. and I've made a lot of black and white quilts. Mm-hmm. When I'm thinking of what I'm going to use in a quilt, there's often times I will take an ivory one and put it in with a white or a grayish one and put it in with the black. So it depends on the actual quilt and depends on how I feel, you know, where they're going to be placed in the quilt. So my stash, so to speak, of black mm-hmm. and white does also consist of, you know, those other tones that are in there. But so yes, I do combine them, but you have to be careful. If you're using mostly, say, pure white mm-hmm. in a quilt, and then you throw in like a cream or an ivory, it could
right.
stick out like a sore thumb. So unless
right.
that doesn't bother you, then that's fine.
Right.
But you just, yes. you know, just how you have to play with it and see if it fits your needs.
I like how the texture of a black and white, because there's only two colors, so
right.
they really do create unique quilts. What do you do when you're deciding a lot of the quilts for these the books and the quilts in the book were done with more of a variety of the other color. You know, it's just like a splash, like the title.
Yep.
Did you do any with just like all red or anything like that?
Well, one of the alternate quilts that I can think of off the top of my head, there was a couple, but one of them in my quilt called Lava Lamp.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Caroline, I gave her the templates and I said, I want you to create a black and white version. Now, if you want to put in one color or you want to put in multiple colors, that's fine. But I want you to create your version of my lava lamp, keeping mm-hmm. in line with it. And she created, what she did is she made the black and white be in columns and then she just used red. But she used a variety of different red fabrics, but it's mm-hmm. all red.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I used multiple colors in mine, but
yeah.
she used just the
cool.
one red. So the reader can actually see what it's going to look like in just one color as well.
Now, speaking of that quilt, I'm going to segue because you like to work with curves and that particular quilt. Yeah, you love curves. So
mm-hmm.
what's a tip for making nice curves, particularly if someone's not really done it very much? What can they do?
Yep. So what I've found over the years, you know, I've done curves a lot and I've done them so many different ways. But what I found, the one tried and true method for me that gives me a nice, smooth, smooth curve is I glue the curve with a glue pen. And there's a variety of different companies that make them, Soline, Fonz and Porter's, Bowen. It's a glue pen. It's water soluble, but it has a finer point than like a glue stick. And you're basically, you're just taking that edge and you're gluing those, the gluing the edge down. So you're not putting pins in. And if it's tacky enough so that say you initially you're gluing it in the wrong spot and you need to move it, you can pick it up very easily and just reposition it. But once it sits for a while, it dries. So you'd have to actually wet it to get it off. But I find that is ultimately the best method, and you get a really smooth curve because it keeps everything nicely in place. You don't have to worry about pins sewing over pins or pulling them out before your needle gets to it. And I did a little video tutorial that they can access on my from my blog so that people can actually see how to do this method. It's really, really cool, and it's it may not be for everyone because everyone has their own comfort zone.
Right.
But I find that this method for me is just a great method.
Neat. Well, I'll have to go look at that video. I want to get in one more thing because we're almost done.
Sure.
You have a new class online at Craftsy. What's that about?
I do. This class is called Paper Piecing the Quiltworks Dresden Plate. As a lot of people know, I am a certified Judy Niemeyer instructor, and it's the first time that myself, Judy Niemeyer, and Craftsy, we've collaborated and we've created an online exclusive class for Craftsy. The class, the pattern cannot be purchased anywhere else. It teaches them how to paper piece using the Judy Niemeyer method of paper piecing, but creating this original block that has been done for Craftsy alone. It's fantastic. They learn, I teach everybody lots of tips and techniques on how to paper piece. I actually do the curved piecing method in there.
Oh, cool.
There's a lot of info on it, and it's accessible to anybody, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I like the online classes are wonderful for people who can't, because you also travel and teach, but, you know, not everybody can make it to wherever you're going to be. So, you know, Jackie, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has. I always enjoy speaking with you, Pat.
I know. This is, and people should visit your website, is Canton Village Quilt Works, that they can.
CVQuiltworks.com was the actual website.
Okay. Go out there and see what Jackie's up to. Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you, Pat. Have a good one.
Mm-hmm. Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. This show is sponsored by Moda Fabrics, and I'm really excited excuse me, to be talking with a fellow Moda designer, Vanessa Gortzen, and her website is Lila Boutique. There we go, Lila Boutique. So, hi, Vanessa, how are you?
Hi, Pat, I'm great. Happy New Year, and thanks for having me.
So let me tell people all the time that I love your work. I love the aesthetic, the fabrics. And we got to meet the first time when our booths were next to each other at the trade show. And so now it's always very exciting whenever we go. It's like a homecoming, isn't it? The trade show.
Yeah, that's right. It's always fun at Quilt Market.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into designing.
Well, as far as designing patterns, it's sort of funny to look back because I really have been designing since the beginning. When I was learning to sew, I didn't ever follow patterns, and mm-hmm. I just really liked making up my own stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I was a mom and at home with my first baby, it was just one of those things where it made sense to me to start designing again, and so I started up a pattern company.
Just like that. And we're all happy you did. So that's now tell me how you got the name for your company name.
Well, Lella Boutique is sort of a reference to Cinderella. And when I was a little toddler, I couldn't say Cinderella, and so I pronounced it Lella. I had a Lella dress. And so Lella is just sort of a reminder to me to always incorporate the whimsical, magical elements of childhood and into everything that I make.
You know, what I'd like to do is if we can just talk a little bit about how you go about designing a line of fabric, because everybody does that in such a unique and personal way. And I always find it fascinating to know what the process is. Maybe you can pick one and tell us, you know, a little bit about how you approached it, one of your lines.
Oh, sure. I feel like with any of my fabric lines, there is always some piece of me in it. So for my most recent one, Little Miss Sunshine, I sort of pulled from the cheerful, optimistic outlook that I have on life. I've always been a really big fan of the book and movie Pollyanna, and I really liked the idea of looking for the good. And so this line of fabric is about looking for the bright side of things and surrounding yourself with those things that make you happy. And so from there, I picked colors that were, you know, definitely bright and happy and conjured up those images of sunshine and picnics and freshly picked flowers.
You know, I just love your designs. Are you like, do you sketch? What is the process for you to come up with your drawings?
It's a mix of things. Sometimes I will start out on paper and just mm-hmm. sketch and then, you know, import it into the computer and sort of manipulate it from there. Or sometimes I'll draw directly into Illustrator or Photoshop, just depending on maybe the idea that I have and how maybe I can best achieve that look. So it's kind of a great experimentation, and I don't necessarily feel like I have a set method of how I go about approaching fabric.
Do you keep like a huge design book? Are you one of those people that's really organized and you can go back through it?
I don't know if you can say I'm organized, but I definitely have a lot of sketches that some are used and some I don't use. So I like to go back and look upon that and see if maybe I have a use for something that didn't make it into one line.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, I always wish I was that organized person in that area. I'm organized in other areas, but when I sketch and draw, I've got like papers everywhere. I've got tons of notebooks. I am like a mess. I was like, so I want to know a little bit about the colors that you like to work with, because you've got these really great greens, and now the lines have sort of like a peach in it. How would you describe that color?
Yeah, peach is how I've been describing it. Sometimes I get a lot of color inspiration from just looking at things on Pinterest. I like to look at maybe bedrooms or just a lot of home decor setups and see what colors stand out to me. And something that had just really stood out to me was peach as I was looking through some of my favorite images. I really like colors that are happy and bright, and so peach was something I was adamant in using in Little Miss Sunshine.
Now, I was out looking on your site, and what I noticed is you did a really nice little write-up about using a pattern over and over again and how you think about that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, are you talking about just how I like to maybe take a quilt pattern and I'll make it multiple times? Maybe, for example, I will make a lot of baby quilts for people. And sometimes I feel like it's hard to find a baby boy pattern that I like to use. So when I find one that I really like, I'll make it over several times playing with different color schemes, not only because maybe it's a the construction is easy to make, but it's just something that goes for that look that I want for, you know, in this case, a baby boy quilt.
Mm-hmm. It gives you a little bit of freedom too, doesn't it? That you don't have to relearn the pattern.
Right. I mean, and it's always fun to see how different a quilt can look by just using different fabrics or placing the fabrics differently, playing with maybe the background fabric instead of using white, using navy or some other solid that you think would look good.
And baby quilts are a great size for experimenting like that because you're not doing the whole bed size quilt. You can just quickly try color combinations. I really like stripes that you use in your lines. Do you always put a stripe in?
No, I think that Little Miss Sunshine, that was actually the first time I've used any kind of a stripe. But I have seen bias stripes in a lot of other lines, and it's fun to use on the bindings, and it looks great in borders. It's something I think a lot of people are finding appealing.
So I asked you if you would share a tip that, you know, for better quilt making, you know, something that you feel really sort of improves what people can do.
Well, to me, I think a lot of people can get overwhelmed with the idea of making a quilt because there is so much technique involved and there are so many factors that come into making a quilt. And so for me, I don't think I'm perfect at piecing, but I have felt like for me, it's more important to enjoy the process and maybe take one small aspect of your quilting and work on that and really get to where you feel like you've mastered it. For example, maybe like perfecting your quarter inch seam.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you're wanting to try a different pressing method or, you know, just some aspect of quilting that if you can take that and master that small aspect, then you can move on to the next. And, you know, I feel like with every quilt that I make, it's better every time. And so it's about enjoying the process and understanding that your quilts don't have to be perfect for it to be an enjoyable hobby.
I think that's a great tip, though, to pick one thing and just work on that rather than trying to say, oh, I want to do this and this and this, because then there's so many different things to focus on, right?
Right, and it can be so easy for people to feel overwhelmed at you know, what we're not perfect at, and that can certainly come into play when making a quilt.
So you also told me that you are someone who loves to do binding. That's not everybody likes that, Vanessa. That's you. Why do you like binding?
Well, I don't know that it's my favorite part by any means, but I do feel like I have sort of mastered that aspect of making a quilt. One thing that has really helped me a lot is glue basting. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a tip that works whether you're going to finish it by hand or if you're going to finish it by machine. So what I do is I will start out and I will sew the binding to the quilt top as standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I do next is I'll take the quilt over to my ironing board and I will I'll press it over to the back with an iron, and then I'll take some Elmer's spool glue and I will glue just above the seam and press the binding back down in place and then give it a shot of steam all the way around. So what this does is, you can make sure that the binding is covering that seam from the front and that it's doing so at a consistent distance. So after the whole thing is glued in place, then you are free to finish it by hand, and you don't need pins or binding clips or anything because it's glued in place really well. Mm-hmm. The other thing is if you want to finish it by machine, you can then flip it over and just stitch in the ditch on the front. And because it's glued in place and it covers the seam and everything, it comes through really consistently and nice on the back.
Oh.
And so that's what I've been doing, and that's why I enjoy it, I think.
Yeah. I haven't tried that method where I do it reverse. I blanket stitch on the front, the binding down, but I haven't tried it the other way. And I think I'm going to do that sometime. Maybe that's my one thing that I'll focus on. Try a new binding technique, the Vanessa way. That's
great.
Now, when you do, can I ask you a quick word because we're almost done? Do you use a glue stick or a liquid basting glue? Do you have a preference for doing that?
Yes. I use the Elmer's Cool Glue. And it's okay. In the bottle, so it's the liquid. But the great thing about that is it washes out.
Yeah.
So, it might be a little bit stiff on your binding when you're stitching it in place, but once you wash the quilt, it completely is out.
Okay. All right. And, you use a lot of white fabric. Do you use color catchers when you wash then?
I have never used a color catcher. I think I probably should, but I haven't had any problems so far.
Fantastic. Well, Vanessa, this has been wonderful to get a peek at your process. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. This year, I've invited Mary Abreu to come back every month. She was here last year, and we had such a great time because she has so much knowledge. She is not only an author and a teacher, but she is pretty much what I call a sewing expert. She has a great depth of knowledge. And so each month, we're going to talk about something very detailed. So hi, Mary. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back, Pat. I'm really excited about what this year is going to bring.
I know. We've been planning it. You and I have sent back and forth, what the topics will be. And you can go out and see Confessions of a Craft Addict for where Mary writes. So we're going to go first deep dive a bit into how to read a pattern, because that's something that not everybody has learned officially, particularly if they're self-taught. Do you find that when you're teaching?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's almost this secret language of patterns, and it can be really overwhelming if you just kind of picked it up and sort of figured things out on your own. And even if you haven't, even if somebody else has taught you or you've taken a class, sometimes it can be a little overwhelming.
And everybody writes differently. There isn't sort of like, there's no board everybody has to be approved by for pattern writing. I mean, anybody anybody can write a pattern. There are big publishing houses like the book publishers and magazines who have formats. So once you start looking in their things, you're going to see formats. But even books will be different by author, aren't they?
Absolutely. And even within that is that, you know, the types of having written sewing apparel sewing books, even those can be written a little differently from quilting books or bag making books. So some of the terminology may be a little bit different or slightly different ways that things are presented based on what it is that you're making.
So what do you recommend that people do who are sort of new to reading patterns or, like you just said, will go read the type of work they aren't familiar with? Maybe they've never made a bag or made a skirt.
I think some of it is having a really good resource where you can look up terms that you're not familiar with. But I always tell people the best thing that you can do when you get started is to read a pattern all the way through and look up the things that are new or confusing to you. So if you've never done a half square triangle and someone, you know, says make half square triangles from this, mm-hmm. you can go, you know, to the American Patchwork and Quilting website and look up a tutorial or a step-by-step of what that is and how you accomplish that. And that really can help a lot when you come encounter things that you're not familiar with.
Yeah, I think that it's so important because the, you know, just the cadence of how a pattern is written, you might see, you know, to just know the sequence of things. So doing a pass through. Now you teach in a shop. Is it a quilt? What shop is it? Tell us.
It's a quilt shop in Decatur, Georgia, near Atlanta, called In Town Quilters. And I teach. I started out there teaching our beginning sewing classes. So for people who have no sewing experience, or maybe they learned how to sew a long time ago, but they kind of want a refresher, or maybe they taught themselves and they want to learn the quote-unquote right way to do things. and then I teach a lot of apparel and bag-making classes, in addition to some quilting classes. So kind of a little bit of everything, but it's a lot of fun. Keeps me on my toes.
Now, one thing that I've noticed with people who are more self-taught for patchwork, for blocks, quilt block making, is they don't actually know that blocks are a grid format. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things I do when I open a new quilt pattern is flip to the full layout of the quilt and see how it's broken down. Because even though some quilts are just one block repeated, but other quilts are going to be a little more involved where they mix blocks of different sizes. But ultimately, everything has to fit together to create either a square, rectangular, finished quilt most of the time. And so I like to kind of trace that grid to see where those blocks come together so I can visualize how what I'm making is going to come together and make this finished quilt that is a wall hanging or twin size or queen size or bigger. So you can kind of see that layout where all those blocks come together. It's a little bit like a puzzle, but it's a little bit easier than a puzzle because you usually are dealing with right angles instead of weird locking shapes that kind of click together.
Yeah, those weird locking curves. We'll leave those to Jackie that we talked to first in the episode.
Exactly.
All the curves. And I think also that people will get go out and get a basic book on quilt making because there's going to be some part in the front about block construction because blocks are like 4 patches, 9 patches, 16 patch, and a patch would be like a square. So they are a grid taken into the individual block, so its components can be recognizable. And a rectangle might be 2 squares next to each other. So
exactly, and it's going to cover a lot of the terms that, you know, when you've been doing this for a little while, you sort of understand things. But, you know, the first time you encounter something like the phrase of fat quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's even, you know, there on the back of the pattern that you need that. Well, if you've never made a quilt before, been in a quilt shop, you have no idea what a fat quarter is.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things are included in there as well. And then once you know what it is, you want them all, so.
Right. So let's talk about another part of the process that most people will do encountering, make no matter what they make, whether it's a quilt, a bag, a table runner address, is they are not going to use the exact same fabric that's featured in the picture because, one, you probably can't find it. Two, that may not be their colors, or any combination of that. What are some tips for translating what you're seeing? Because I think this is where people get confused. They see the picture and they're like, okay, I like the design, but I don't want navy. I want green. You know, how can we go about doing that successfully?
Well, there are a couple of different ways you can do it. One of the things you can do is flip to that quilt layout and make a photocopy and break out some color pencils or some crayons and just kind of color in the blocks to sort of get an idea of what you like. I have a program called Adobe Illustrator, and sometimes I'll make a digital mock-up. It's the same way you could use a program like Inkscape. If you have EQ, you can do something
EQ,
really similar,
yeah,
like from the quilter. So a program where you can kind of design and see how you like that, because even just being able to use and fill in the colors will make a big difference in sort of helping you visualize. A lot of times I'll hear when people come in, they're like, I'm not a very visual person. And you can be a visual person. You can kind of train yourself to change the way you see things by starting with that black and white layout and just using what tools you have to make your vision and your idea come to life. But then one of the things I always try to do is when you do substitute fabrics and you make a plan and you get things going, if you don't start working on it right away, jot down a note about what you did, because when you pick that up in a month or 3 months or a year or longer, you won't pull out that stack of fabric and then have no idea what you were doing. Not that I'm speaking from personal experience.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. We've never done that ourselves, Mary.
No, never.
You know, the other thing is that a lot of times there will be maybe a list of what the fabrics are where you could take your swatches and create a swatch page and just say, my red one is really navy one, because I've decided wherever there's red in that quilt, I would like to use navy. And then you could have your own little guidepost for transferring. The other thing, and I don't know whether you've noticed this, Mary, because I'm sure you've helped people with picking fabrics, is if the project has a light and a dark, if you're new at switching it up, keeping it light and dark with your colors, right?
Yeah, that's always a good idea. And because it does make a difference in how the project turns out, the paying attention to those values can really change how a quilt looks. So if you don't go with lights and darks, if you go with much more consistent value across, your quilt's going to look very different. And that may be a good thing, but it may be disappointing as well. So sometimes just by switching those out, just kind of still playing with those values, it makes your quilt turn out the way you'd like, but makes it a little bit easier for you to make those substitutions.
Yeah, I've noticed that people will have fabrics that they get a lot of medium tones. Have you noticed that? Where it's just, there's no contrast.
And they just don't turn out like you would expect, because there's nowhere for your eye to see that pattern develop in your quilt.
Right. You can't distinguish the components then, and then you've done a lot of work and you can't tell. And I see that where people are disappointed because they don't get the contrast. So if you look carefully at what the original pattern's contrast, if you mimic it with your substitution, what do you find when you do a lot with bags? What do you find that people kind of struggle with color substitution on making bags?
I think people get a little more nervous with picking out bag fabrics, because it's something that you typically, like with a quilt, no one may ever see that unless you share a picture or they come into your house and you show it to them or you give it away. But with a bag, that's something that's going to be on your arm, and it can be a little overwhelming. And I always, suggest to people, look at what you have on right now. Look at what you're wearing. Look at what you carry around every day. And that sort of makes it a little easier for people to translate that into a fabric. I think people sometimes have to think about, too, how they use something. So with a quilt, while you might be inclined to use a lot of light colors, with bags, I sometimes do try to point out to people, you know, if you're carrying a bag that's white,
yeah,
that, you know, you think about your daily life, and if you're the kind of person who ends up wearing your coffee all the time,
yeah,
you know, maybe a light color bag is not the best choice, or
right.
you can invest in, you know, Scotch Guard or put some iron vinyl or something on it so it wears a little easier.
Yep. Putting the bag on the floor, or, you know, yeah, kids, yeah, dark colors. I also noticed that sometimes quilters, particularly if they like large prints, those don't always translate to the smaller size of a bag because they might be kind of overwhelming.
They can be. And the size as well, because sometimes with smaller bags, things may be cut up differently. And so a larger print may not carry over really well. But sometimes it can just be really fun. I've done some really interesting things where I've just chopped things up and done more patchworky strip work kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger prints can actually be kind of interesting that way, where it's a little more liberating. It can be a little scary sometimes because you're like, wow, this is a really big print. But then when you chop it up, it's like, oh, well, that looks completely different this way. And I don't know why it feels so overwhelming sometimes to pick fabric for something so much smaller than for a quilt. It should
yeah,
be the reverse, but...
You only need like two fabrics, but then it's like, well, then that's it. Oh my gosh. Are they the right two?
I know. I will sweat more for a bag than I will for quilts sometimes. Quilts, I'm just like, I just throw it together. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
A bag, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Is this the right polka dot? I don't know.
That's right. So let's do one. We have like 2 minutes. So let's do one more tip about being successful and being sure you're going to be happy with the project. There's a couple of things people can do.
Yep. I think making a test block or two before you starting a full quilt is a really good way to work through the instructions. And it's also kind of a good way to check those values and see, is this showing off the design the way you want it to? You know, mini quilts are a great way to try a technique before you get in the investment of a bed-sized quilt. If you really want to make a Dresden, but you're not sure that you want to make a giant Dresden or a giant Dahlia, try a mini quilt instead. And it gives you a little bit less time, a little bit less fabric investment. And you can decide, yeah, I really like this, or, you know, I'm good.
Yeah. Also, it might be the technique, because making a Dresden is a specific technique. So, you know, you might decide that making, you know, 40 of them is, you know, not really what you want to do.
Exactly.
So, Mary, we always have more things on our list to talk about, which next month you're going to come back in February and we're going to talk some more on, and this is going to be so much fun.
Oh, I know. Thank you so much for having me, Pat. I cannot wait. We're going to have a blast.
So I'm excited to visit Mary at confessionsofacraftaddict.com, and I am going to be right back after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And as always, in the first show of the year, I like to have the editors on from American Patchwork so that we can chat a little bit about what's going on for the year in the magazines. And my friend, Linda Augsburg, who is the executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine and several others, is here. Hi, Linda.
Hey, how you doing?
I am good. I am good. How's everything over at the magazine?
Oh, well, first I want to say thank you so much for having me on. Yes. Everything here is great. We are really having a great year. You know, the holidays are over and so many fun things have kicked off here in the office, and we just can't wait to talk about them.
I know. Tell me what, you know, we have stories to talk about. You have a challenge going on for UFO busting at the American Patchworks website. So what do you want? Just talk about storage a little bit, because I think the beginning of the year, people get crazy about organizing. I do. I normally like haul everything out of my room and put it all back.
I understand that entirely, and that is why we try and, you know, every February we revisit storage and organization, and we've got a bunch of slideshows up online for storage, but what we did in the magazine in the February issue of American Patchwork and Quilting this year is actually talked a little bit more about what your organizing personality is. Yeah. I think that a lot of us see a picture, and then we say, okay, that's how I'm going to do my room. And we do it that way, and then it's like, gosh, this just doesn't work for me. I don't understand why I must just be terribly unorganized. Mm-hmm. And that's me. I constantly think, I must be terribly unorganized. So it was really eye-opening for me when we worked with a professional organizer, and she said, really, there are four different types of personalities, and each one approaches both their stuff and how to best organize it differently. Mm. And just knowing that made me feel better that, like, all these things I've been following, they just probably weren't the same organizing personality as I was.
Now, where is that at? Do we put it in the search bar? Or?
Actually, that's in the issue itself. So
okay.
That's in American Patchwork and Quilting in the February 2016 issue, which is on newsstands now.
Okay.
So, there's four different personality types, and you can read a little description about each one and then look at some characteristics. And if those things ring true for you, then we've got some fabulous first project steps and some optimal organizing tools for each of those personality types. So, you know, for instance, some people, you know, the family-oriented Fran, where her stuff really, she's one of those people who really has that meaning attached to stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it might be that repurposed vintage items are what she's most effective in decorating with and using as storage because it's personal for her. Whereas, you know, organizing Olivia might be the one who goes to, you know, a store where she can get decorative bins that are all the same. You know, so it's very organized for her because that's just her personality type. So it's just the differences between how you really approach, you know, some people don't see the clutter as a problem.
That's true.
You know, it's just part of quilting. Yeah. My room, my quilting room is always going to look like this because I'm a quilter. And so just understanding and accepting that about yourself. And then, but here are some ways that you can make it a little less stressful for yourself. Because I think there's a lot of stress that goes into my sewing room's a mess.
Yeah, people sort of put, they look at something else and think, oh, it should look like that. Whereas if they're happy and messy chaos and it doesn't bother them and they can find things, then there's nothing wrong. But
right. Well, and even for that person, there's some tips as to how to make that easier. So, you know, maybe it is that you're, you know, if you like having your stuff around, you're the person who needs, you know, open shelves and clear bins, you know,
that's
and a pegboard to hold all your rotary cutters so you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of little tips that make it, oh, like that makes sense for me. That is why I like, you know, my rulers hanging on a pegboard or whatever works, you know, in your situation where somebody else, that might make them crazy. So some great tips in there. I think it'll help people get to a point where the room they're working in is the room that fits them, not somebody else's room that they're just making do with and frustrated with.
Yeah, and I like to do a lot of sorting of things because I'm one of those people, you know, so I have to have mm-hmm. things sorted and have to know where they are. You also told me that in January you're doing daily storage tips.
We are. It's going to be, yep, it's on.
Is it that one on the Instagram account?
Yes, that's where. Yeah. Thank you. I was having a blank. I'm like, is that on Facebook or Instagram?
Right.
Yes, those are going to be on Instagram. Daily updates. So different photos we've done over the years and different new ideas and basically just a great way to inspire you to get more organized.
So do you personally have one storage thing that you've done, Linda, that's really been like, you know, this is one of the best things I ever did?
You know, I'd love to say yes. Every time I organize my storing room, it's always just like, oh, dear heavens, now what have I done? There was actually a point where I had all the fabric, and when I moved, I had all the fabric on the floor in its bin, and there was this collapse of all these bins and piles of fabric, and I thought, oh, heavens.
Oh.
You know, I could have been buried under that. So, but what I find that the pegboard thing works for me because I think I just need more space and having those supplies up on the wall. So I have a pegboard that holds my rulers and I have another, I have a rack system that holds my rotary cutters. And at least then it's an easy thing to put back. Like I know that if I'm done with a rotary cutter, I can put it back in those bins and it's mm-hmm. off my surface and I'm not going to have to go digging for it next time I need it because it's in those bins. And they hang right there and they're just super obvious, you know, I can't miss mm-hmm. them. So I do like that. That's very helpful for me.
I like drawers. You know, I have drawers. It's the same kind of concept, but I have two drawers that right in front of my cutting table, you know, that are under the cutting table. And that's where I put things that I'm going to use often, but I don't want to leave them out so that I can pull up in the drawer and there's rotary cutters and there's scissors and paper clips. And
I do bad with drawers, out of sight, out of mind for me, which I think is why at one point I did invest in really great looking, and I love them, containers, but they're not see-through. And so I ended up pinning ribbons to the outside of the bins so I could figure out what color was inside because it was really tough for me. I like to see it. I like to have it peek out at me. I forget that it's there, and then I end up, not that this is a problem, of course, buying more fabric.
Oh,
The other thing, there are some great other tips in the issue about organizing your sewing space, hearing other tools that are out there that might make it easier and all of those things. So all that is in the Sew in the Know section of the February issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. And just some really fun ideas. Like you said, that month of storage on Instagram is, and the hashtag for that is #APQStorage. So if you go to #APQStorage on Instagram, you'll see those every day in the feed. So that's a lot of fun to see see all those ideas. And like I said, the ones that resonate with you, pick those up. And the ones that don't, just leave them behind.
Just wait for tomorrow. There'll be another
one.
That's
right. There'll be another great idea. But speaking of great ideas, mm-hmm. We did have a great idea here in the office last year, the APQ resolution. It actually started, it's such a funny story. Jody Sanders here, who's the editor of Quilts and More, came in one day and said, you know, we all seem to have all these UFOs. Should we motivate each other to get them done?
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, yeah, you know, let's all make a list. And Lindsay said, yeah, let's all make a list. And, you know, could we open this up to our readers?
Yeah.
Like, of course, that would be great. So, you know, how much more motivation than everybody playing along? So we had so much fun with it last year that we did it again this year. So if you go to #APQResolution, mm-hmm. you can see all the things. Once a month, what we do, we tell you to make a list of 12. Now, my list, I'm sorry to say, is 36. I have three columns of 12 because I have one column of 12 that is just quilts to be quilted.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And then there's two other columns, quilts that are actually in progress, and then other things that need to be done that are creative but not quilts. Mm-hmm. But every month you make your list, and then every month we pick a number, and whatever's on your list for that in that number slot, that's the one mm-hmm. you work on. And so it's one of those things where, you know, it's 1 month. You're going to work on it for 1 month. It's in your UFOs. Mm-hmm. You liked it at some point. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to make it just the way it was. Maybe you look at it and say, you know what? I love those blocks. I hate the way it was supposed to be set. I'm going to do something different. Mm-hmm. But just that impetus of starting it and taking it a little further through your UFO process is super helpful.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's not like you have to finish it that month. It's just this is what you're going to work on. Plus, it gives people variety because people get bored with things, particularly long-term projects. You know, it's like
– yes. Well, so. And it makes you feel so good to finish. I finished something the other day. I kid you not. Kid you not. I had sewn the – it was on the list last year for needed the binding sewn on and finished. I got the binding sewn on the front and half-stitched, maybe even three-quarters stitched, on the back.
Yeah.
And I put it down, and it's been sitting next to my chair ever since. And I thought to myself, this is just silly. So I pulled on some Christmas movies and sat there and finished it. And I felt so good just having that. And it didn't take me long. There wasn't much binding left, and it's done. And, you know, I love the process of quilting, but I also love done.
Yes. Done is good. Done is a good word. We like done.
So, isn't that something? So, yeah, so we all have. So I actually worked this weekend on, we had a little, I'm going to let you know, there was a little cheat. Because I hadn't actually made my list for this year, but they drew the number on the 31st before we left the office so that we knew because we announced it on the first of the month. And so I knew what was going to – so the project that was on my list of things I wanted to get done this year got moved up to that time slot.
There you go.
Number two got worked on, and it's on the quilting machine now. So I got the borders sewn on, and I got it on the quilting machine. So I'm optimistic that, you know, in this month I can get it quilted and finished, and that's so exciting to me.
It is, and I think everybody should join in this because I'm also doing that on my Facebook group, and I know that you're putting this on the magazine's Facebook group. And I want to catch – we only have like about – just real short, but want to mention that we have my exclusive mystery row quilt.
Yes. That was the other thing I wanted to talk about was the mystery row quilt. We actually did the first row in the February issue as well, and it is going to be a mystery so that people won't know what's going to be next. Right. And I was just – as I was listening to you talk to Jackie and Vanessa and Mary, I was pulling some – colors. I know Mary was just talking about the digital layouts and doing things in a software to look at the colors, and I was going to do that with the first row because I found my fabric.
Yay! So excited, Linda!
So I can't wait to get – so I'm going to do a little of that, you know, planning so that I get things where I want it for the first row, and we'll see what comes next.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you know, Linda, this has been so much fun to get a peek at what's going on in the magazine. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, APQ, hashtag APQ Row Quilt. Other people who are working on their row quilts as well should post photos there on Instagram.
Perfect. I will do that too.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Thanks, Linda. Have a good day.
You too.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm delighted to have you here every week to listen to a new show, and we'll see you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.